As Mark said, we are in Luke 16. Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account for your management, because you cannot be manager any longer.' The manager said to himself, 'What shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do, so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses.' So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' 900 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 450. Then he asked the second, 'How much do you owe?' 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, 'Take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwelling. This is the word of the Lord."
Good morning. Good morning. Use wealth to gain friends for yourselves. I'll bet you if I put that, just wrote that and said, "Did Jesus say that?" you'd be like, "Jesus never said that." And there it is in red ink in my Bible. Thank you, Matt and Catherine. That was awesome. Love them. They're such an amazing couple. And as you know, I'm spending 3 weeks talking about stewardship and generosity as we have this opportunity to purchase this property down the street. And in 3 weeks, you really can't do a ton. And so what I want to do is just give us kind of the basic biblical principles of stewardship and generosity, and kind of give us the tools we need just to think about our money, our possessions in general, and certainly for this opportunity we have. So last week, I started with what I think is the most important foundational biblical principle of all, which is the principle of God's grace. We looked at 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, and when we think about our money, our stuff, and how we navigate it, I think the most important thing that we can know is the grace of God, is to interact with that stuff with this deep awareness of how God's grace has come so generously to us through Jesus Christ, and how that grace is going to be there every day of our lives. It's never going to run out. It's never going to run dry. And so we are to have this abundance mentality, not a scarcity mentality, but an abundance mentality. I'm a recipient of grace. God will provide for me, and so I can navigate accordingly. So today, we're going to look at some other really basic biblical principles, and they come in the form of, I think, one of the most provocative and, frankly, confusing of all of Jesus' parables. And if some of you are confused right now, you are in good company, all right? I hope to unconfuse you somewhat by the end of the day. I'm still working it out myself. The parable of the shrewd manager, or as I like to call it, the parable of the sneaky, conniving dishonest manager. What on earth is happening, and why on earth would Jesus say, "I want you to be like that guy. I'm commending this guy to you as an example"? What is going on? So I want to spend a couple minutes just getting inside the parable itself, and then I want to draw out three, I think, really foundational principles for stewardship that come from this parable. All right, so you've got two main characters, of course. You've got this owner. He's undoubtedly a wealthy landowner, all right? So I want you to picture ancient Israel. You've got a Mediterranean climate and this wealthy landowner with a wealthy estate. He's got lots of land that's being farmed. He's got a beautiful villa. He is a man of influence. He is respected in the town. He's well known in the area. He has many servants working his estate, and he delegates the management of his affairs to a manager, as many wealthy landowners did back in that day. This guy has access to his finances, obviously all of his business dealings, and so there's the wealthy landowner. And then you have this manager, and we don't know anything about his past. So I kind of picture this guy like a kid who grew up in town and didn't grow up from a wealthy family. He a decently smart kid. He's the kind of guy who knew how to get by just like on the bare minimum. Like in school, he was getting B minuses. He was nailing B minuses all through school. He was smarter than that, but he's like, that's not going to raise any eyebrows for my parents. So he knows how to get by. He's the kind of kid who would get in trouble, and he always knew how to get out of trouble. Like he just kind of talk his way. It's kind of frustrating. He could just talk his way out of things. And he grows up. And eventually he lands this job at this estate. And it's a pretty epic job. And he's probably underqualified for the job. And he's the kind of guy who just, it's a great opportunity. He takes it for granted. He doesn't make the most of it. And what it says in the story is that he wasted the owner's possessions, or squandered. It's the exact same word in the parable just before this, which is the parable of the prodigal son. Remember, the younger son goes away and squanders the inheritance in wild living. This is the exact same word. He squanders the master's resources. We don't know if it's incompetence or corruption or both, okay? Profound mismanagement. And one day he gets called in, and I'm going to call it a Wednesday afternoon, just for fun. He gets called into the boss's office. And the boss says, okay, here's the situation. I've been hearing some things about you, and I'll tell you, none of them are good. It looks like you've profoundly mismanaged what I've entrusted to you. You're probably fired, just to let you know where you stand. But I'm going to give you till Friday. To get all my affairs, to bring everything before me and give an account of what's going on, all right? Prove me wrong. You know, like, show me that I'm wrong, but all the things I'm hearing are not good. So you've got 2 days, and that's the deal. So he walks out of the boss's office, and he's obviously utterly panicked. Like, for the first time in his life, he is caught, and there's no way out of this. I mean, there's nothing he could do to convince him that he hasn't squandered his stuff. And so he's not only going to lose his job, okay, he's also going to lose his home. Okay, he lives on this estate. Okay, a lot of managers would actually live. I mean, he's been living it up on this estate. So he's going to lose his job, he's going to lose his home, and there's no way he's going to get hired anywhere in the area, right? Everyone's going to know, hey, this guy's not the kind of guy you want to hire. And I just found his inner monologue very fascinating. Look at verse 3. I mean, you get insight into who this guy is. The manager says to himself, what am I going to do? Right? He's panicked. I'm not strong enough to dig. He looks at, I got desk hands. You know, I'm not strong. I've never worked a real day's work in my life. And I'm too ashamed to beg. I got too much ego. Okay, how do you feel about it? You like this guy? Not willing to work hard, too ashamed to beg. And he's stuck. He's like, come on, think, what do I do? And he realizes he's got one thing going for him, only one thing going for him, and it says he's still got 2 days. He's got 2 days to come up with something, and nobody knows he's getting fired. None of his owners, like the associates and the business people that he works with, the debtors, no one knows what's happening. So he's got 2 days, and he still has his boss's authority to do something. And that's what he's got going for him. So he comes up with a plan, and it is sneaky, and it is shrewd, isn't it? I know what I'll do, verse 4, so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. I'll ingratiate myself in the next 2 days with all my master's debtors. I'll get them new deals. I'll cut their debts in half. I'll rearrange lease agreements in ways that people will be profoundly indebted to me. They'll be so grateful for what I do that when I get kicked out of this house, at least they'll put me up in their house and I'll have some place to stay. Right? I can use my master's stuff to secure my future, at least I'll have a place to stay. And in the first century, they had this principle of reciprocity. If you do someone else a favor, they're pretty much obligated to return the favor, okay? So this is his plan. Now, let me just pause. How are we feeling about this guy? Is he a hero? Is he an anti-hero? How are we feeling about this guy? And in the shocking reveal of this parable, everyone else in the first century hearing this would feel the same way as you are. In the shocking reveal, Jesus says, I want you to be like this guy. I want you to emulate this guy. I want you to think the way this guy's thinking. And in the surprise end of the parable, verse 8 says, look at verse 8, the master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. The master commends him. Now, let me be clear. He's not commending him because he's dishonest or because he's lazy or because he's too proud to beg. He's commending him for one thing and one thing alone, because he acted shrewdly. I had to look up that word. The word means astute or sharp in practical matters. So he's commended for one thing, by being savvy, okay? By being smart, by seeing an opportunity and taking advantage of it. And the master himself undoubtedly is a shrewd guy. He didn't get rich by being stupid, right? He got rich by being savvy, by seeing opportunities and taking advantage of them. And so even though his manager has done this at his expense, I think what he's saying is, hey, I don't like what you did, but in another sense, like, hey, kudos, touche. You know, as a shrewd guy myself, I can appreciate an opportunistic man. You saw an opportunity to advantage yourself. You took advantage of it, and I commend you for that. That's kudos on you. Does that make sense? Okay. And Jesus is saying, I want you to be like that guy. Now, just to make sure we're clear, he's not saying I want you to be lazy like that guy, or proud like that guy, or dishonest like that guy. But in one way and one way alone, I want you to be like this guy. I want you to be shrewd. I want you to be strategic. I want you to take advantage of opportunities when they come your way. Okay? So what I want to do for the rest of our time is I want to step back and look at three principles for biblical stewardship and generosity. And what I think, when we kind of get out of the shock of, like, why are you commending this idiot to me today, we realize actually there's three ways in which our situation is exactly like this manager's situation. Okay, and I'll list them now, and then I want to just kind of tease them out for the rest of our time. First, like this guy, we too are managers. We are not owners. We are managing stuff that is not ours. Okay? Like this manager, number two, we have a very short window of time to work with someone else's stuff to impact the long-term future. And so three, like this manager, we are being called to get shrewd. That's my new tagline, get shrewd. You know, I'm gonna make get shrewd shirts for us. Get shredded, no, get shrewd, you know? We're being called to think creatively and strategically about how to make the most of opportunities. All right, if you're still a bit confused, I think we will unconfuse you as we go. So I want to just tease these out for the rest of our time. Principle number one of, this is like basics of biblical stewardship. We are not owners. We're not owners. We are stewards, managers. Principle number one, it is all God's. You live on God's property, and you are dealing with God's stuff every day of your life, full stop, okay? We sang the song, this is my world. This is my Father's world. It's all his, and scripture is so clear about this. Psalm 24:1, the earth is the Lord's, and everything in it, the world and all who live in it, he owns it all. I love Psalm 50. He's talking about when Israel is giving sacrificial animals to him in their worship. He says, I don't have any need of a bull from your stall or of goats from your pens. For every animal of the forest is mine, right? And the cattle on 1,000 hills. If I were hungry, would I tell you? The God of the universe, why would I tell you if I were hungry? For the world is mine. I can eat anytime I want. And all that is in it. So this is easy to say and hard to come to terms with. Oops, you weren't supposed to see that yet. Your house is not your house. It is God's house. Your cars are God's cars. Your clothes are God's clothes. All the money in your IRA account is God's money. This is just reality. It's a really hard reality for us to come to terms with, especially in like the West, especially as Americans, where we have this story in our heart, our lives of like the self-made man, the self-made woman who can achieve upward mobility through right hard work, and this is the American story, and it's a beautiful story. But scripture would say, yeah, but underneath that story is what Paul says here. What do you have that you did not receive? everything you have, you received. And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you did not? Even the self-made person who has achieved upward mobility, you know, how did those relationships, those relational connections that were key, where did those come from, do you think? Where did those educational opportunities come from? Even your own hard work, your own hard work ethic. Not every human being has a strong work ethic. Where do you think that came from? What do you have that you did not receive? Most of us have to learn this truth. It's all God's. We have to learn this truth the hard way. Like to truly learn. We have to learn it the hard way. I started 2025 thinking my hair was my hair. I really did. I thought this is my hair. It's my hair on my head. And if you'd have told me on New Year's Day this year that in September I'd be bald, I would have laughed at you. Okay? I knew scripture says, you know, all the hairs of my head are numbered by God. I didn't know that all the hairs of my head were owned by God. Not my hair. Turns out it's God's hair. Some of you have learned this in profound ways with your finances. Some of you made millions of dollars at some stage in your life only to see it all disappear pretty much in an instant when there's a downturn or a deal that went sideways and you learned in a profound way, oh my goodness, this is not my stuff. This is God's stuff. We were just managers. Verse 11, Jesus ends the parable. Verse 12. If you have been trustworthy with someone else's property, if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, meaning it's God's property, who will give you property of your own? It's not our stuff. It can be a very painful thing to come to terms with. But I think on the other side of that, it's actually a very freeing reality. I'm living in God's world. I'm not going to hold any of this stuff too tightly. It's not my stuff anyways. I'm managing somebody else's stuff. And I wonder how much, if that really came deep into our souls, how much we would change how we navigate our money and our material possessions. I mean, if you truly thought, this isn't mine, like this is God's money, these are God's possessions, I am being asked to steward them on his behalf. Just think about how you would hold all of your stuff very differently. In the Old Testament, there is this beautiful practice that God called Israel into to remind them of this. It was the practice of the giving of the first fruits. And some of you are aware of this, but in an agrarian society in that day when everyone farmed, the idea was when the harvest came, all Israel was to give the first fruits, the first 10% of the harvest was given to God, to the priests and to the temple and the needs there, okay? The idea is before the full harvest comes in, you actually give the first and best to God, which is a profound act of trust that the rest of the harvest is going to come, that God will provide for you. But it was also a symbolic gesture. This first 10% symbolizes the whole harvest is yours, God. Let's not kid ourselves. It's all yours. And this is one way that we demonstrate to ourselves and to you that it's all yours. And so I invite you into that practice, this idea of the first fruits, that I believe one of the practices of generosity is to give of our first fruits to God, meaning we don't wait to see what's left at the end of the year or the end of the month, but in faith we say, Lord, we give you this first and we'll figure out how to live on what's left because it's all yours. And that 10% number, it doesn't carry over into the New Testament. There's no New Testament passage, so I don't think that's a hard and fast number. But it's not a bad number to start with. If you need a number to start with, or if you're just starting from scratch, it's not a bad number to shoot for. And so if some of you have never thought through this, I don't want to like go into too much detail, but it's as simple as, let's say you make 10 grand a month. It means at the beginning of the month, you set aside, I'll just say a grand. Lord, we're going to give this away to whatever causes you put on our hearts because it all is yours. Some of you don't have a salary. Some of you make your money in massive chunks. You don't make money for a year and then you make $1 million in 2 weeks. Great. You set it aside when you make it. You make $1 million, you set aside 100 grand or whatever the number is. It's a first fruits practice, reminding ourselves The whole thing is yours. And we want to give acknowledging that. So, first principle, we're just managers. Don't take your stuff too seriously. It's not your stuff, okay? You might lose your hair if you do. So, don't do that. Second principle, like this guy, we have a really narrow window of time before there's a reckoning and we give an accounting of our lives, and we have the opportunity in that number, that small window of time, to use someone else's resources to make an impact for the long term. Okay, let me show you. I love little graphs, as you know. So this was the shrewd manager's situation. I said it's a Wednesday to Friday. I don't know if it was 2 days, but it was a very short amount of time. He had 2 days where he still had access to the owner's wealth, and he could do something before there was a reckoning. He was going to have to give an accounting of his management. And after that, he had the rest of his life to deal with. And so he had an opportunity to do something in those short 2 days that would secure his long-term future. And I think Jesus would say, that is precisely your situation, every human being. This is us. We have our lives in this life. They're very short, relatively. At some point, they will end, and there will be a reckoning. Well, we will give an account of how we have managed God's resources and our lives, and then begins the rest of eternity. And we have an opportunity in this very short window to do things that will impact the long term. It's a very short life. It's a very short life. And again, this is a lesson most of us learn the hard way. I've just spent the last 48 hours with 14 of my college friends who have all convened in San Clemente from all over the country because one of my best friends has an aggressive cancer. And he's done his 6 months of chemo. And now he lives in 3 month segments where he'll go every 3 months and get a scan to see how things are. And he might have many good years ahead, but it's serious enough that 14 guys flew in from all over the country to spend 3 days together. And last night we were around a table sharing stories and crying and all very profoundly aware that life is very short, so much shorter than we think. And then you have a reckoning, and then you have eternity. And this guy gained friends for himself in those 2 days so that they would welcome him into their homes for the rest of his life. And in a very provocative way, Jesus says the same thing. Let me read it to you again. This is, I think, the key to understanding this parable. Verse 9, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. The key is to see that little word, eternal. This guy used wealth to gain friends so they would welcome into temporary dwellings. I want you to use wealth, Jesus says, to gain friends for yourself so that they will welcome you in eternal dwellings. So that when you come to eternity, there will be a group of people who are very excited to see you. Dave, it's so good to see you. Oh my goodness, I've been waiting for this. Come in. Come inside, have a drink with me. Let's have some tea, some coffee, you name it, whatever it is. Come in, it's so good to see you. Why are they so excited to see you? Because you're part of the reason they're there. Because you did things in this little window of time that impacted their lives and brought them to Jesus, encouraged them in their faith so that they were there in heaven. And now they're so happy to see you. So for instance, maybe you enter eternity and one of your kids' friends is there. Mrs. G, it's so good to see you. You know, when I was in junior high, man, you had me over to your house. That your home, that kitchen, was, you don't even know, that was such a refuge for me. The amount of cookies and meals you made me, the conversations we had, that was a really hard time in my family's life. And you were like a second home to me. Your home, that possession, that material possession became a refuge for me. You have no idea how much that mattered to me. Maybe Catherine gets to see two Indian kids. Oh my gosh, Mrs. Anderson. You know, we never met, but you guys gave to an organization that rescued us from slavery, brought us into a safe house, and we learned the gospel. It's so fun to meet you. Okay? This is the idea. We've got this window of time to impact people with stuff, with material possessions for all eternity. And I think this manager, for all his faults, he had the right perspective on this. You know, I was thinking, the kind of the guy he was, he had 2 days. He could have gone completely a different direction. He's like, dude, I'm screwed. I'm toast. This is over. But I got 2 more days on this estate. I'm going to live it up. Right? I'm gonna be out on the porch at sunset. I'm going to have the master's fine wine. I'm going to have a couple good more meals. This is over in 2 days, so I might as well enjoy it and take it in. And that would have been understandable, but so short-sighted. And instead, he got moving and had a long-term vision for his life that he is commended for. So that's the second principle. Very short amount of time to make an impact on people for eternity. So principle number three. So it's all God's. Short window of time to use God's stuff to impact people for eternity. Principle number three, so get shrewd. Get shrewd. He is not saying get dishonest, get sneaky, right? He's saying get strategic, be inventive. Think about opportunities that present themselves and go after them. Think strategically. How can I use God's resources to impact people for eternity? Look at the parable ends, really the formal story of the parable ends in verse 8, okay? With the master commending the manager for acting shrewdly. And then Jesus' first comment is the second half of verse 8. Look at what he says in the second half of verse 8. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of light. What is he saying? He's bemoaning the fact that worldly people are more savvy than kingdom people are, for the most part. And he said, this shouldn't be the way, he's saying. And it's so true. I think of people of this world, so many people want to get rich, right? People wake up in this world thinking, how can I make money? How can I get rich? And I'm honestly amazed at how shrewd and savvy some people are. I mean, especially in today's world with the internet, like people find a niche, they find a need, they create a product I never would have thought of, and they're making millions of dollars. And I'm like, man, you are creative. I never would have thought of that. That is so shrewd. And Jesus is saying, if only God's people were that shrewd. Not in making money for themselves, but in using God's money to make kingdom impacts in this world. If only God's people woke up thinking, how can I use my resources that God has given me to change people's lives? If they woke up getting scheming about how to make that kind of impact, how to help people, how to give to causes that are gonna make a kingdom impact, how to use all the things they have in ways that will impact people for eternity. Jesus is saying, if only God's people were as savvy, as shrewd as the people of the world. And what's so interesting to me is this room is full of shrewd business people. Some of you are so smart and inventive and entrepreneurial. We have business owners, we have creatives, we have very successful people in this room. And I think it's unfortunate that maybe we haven't even as a church done that well, but I think the church at large hasn't done a great job of, I think we have this thought of like at work, I'm creative, I'm strategic, and then I come to church and I'm kind of told just to turn that whole thing off. And in fact, I'm kind of made to feel guilty because I have a lot of money, because I'm good at making money, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do with that, so I just kind of turn that off when I come to church, and maybe some compassion will lead me to give some money to something, but like, I've got this thing that I do over here, and then I'm kind of told just to turn all that off, and it's kind of bad, and you shouldn't do that, and now I don't really know what I'm supposed to do over here, and I think Jesus would say, no, take all that energy and creativity and thoughtfulness and strategery, I know it's not a word, and bring that with a kingdom lens. How can we use this resource to make epic impacts on human beings for eternity? This is what Jesus is saying. So, for instance, some of you maybe, you need to start in your home a strategic hospitality fund, okay? and you get really strategic. You set aside a certain amount of money, and you think about your home, and you think, this is a strategic outpost for God's kingdom. This is not just a sanctuary for our family, but we use this home in very strategic ways, and we actually have a fund, money set aside, to offer hospitality to people. Every Friday night, we're going to invite some people over, or I, once a month, I try to have lunch with someone from work, or someone, a neighbor, maybe who doesn't know Jesus, or someone I just want to encourage, and I have a strategic hospitality fund set aside. I remember when I was in, another example, when I was in high school, I remember hearing about this group of business owners. Probably some of you in this room were part of this, or certainly some people at this church were part of this. It's a group of guys who'd done very well, very successful, wealthy. And they said, hey, let's come together. Let's start having conversations together about how to make a kingdom impact in Orange County. How can we bring our business skill and our resources and our thoughtfulness to doing something together that will make, you know, an impact? And what they ended up, they landed on a number of things, but one of the things they landed on is caring for foster care kids and emancipated youth as they, you know, are they turn 18, and they created this transitional housing, all these affordable kind of housing and then services in very strategic ways for kids who could easily get, you know, lost in the system. What kingdom passions has God put on your heart? I'll end with this. What would it look like to be strategic with your stuff for the sake of the kingdom? Part of why this building, we're presenting this building, is because we think it's a remarkably strategic moment. I mean, think about, there's a space that really that meets all of our needs, and it's literally one block away. I mean, I park in that parking lot already. Like, that's a remarkably opportunistic moment for us. Maybe it's not supposed to happen, but it's a strategic moment where we can make an impact. I loved hearing Matt and Catherine on the next generation of people in our church. So what would it look like for you? It's not my stuff, right? Got a very short window of time. How can I thoughtfully, creatively use everything that God's entrusted to me to impact people for good? I'll leave you with this thought. Giving and stewardship, I think Jesus would say, shouldn't be boring. If it's boring, something's missing. It should be interesting to you. It should be creative. It should be fun. It should be something you get excited about, thinking about, seeing opportunities in the world and going after them, making some risks, making some things that don't work, some things that work beautifully. It's a kingdom life, seeking first his kingdom with everything he's given us. So your marching orders this week are get shrewd.